Fourth and final hour, Darren Donick and Chase on this Wednesday afternoon, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good conversation with Predators head coach John Hines in the second hour of the program from up in Edmonton. They're in Toronto right now, all Lightning over the Panthers, 4-0. About 3 minutes gone in the third period. Minnesota and Colorado in Edmonton coming up in about 30 minutes for the second exhibition, second of six games today on the docket in the National Hockey League. Chris Mason, every Wednesday at 1 o'clock, and that is always brought to you by Smoky Mountaintops, the exclusive partner of the Nashville Predators. Visit SmokyMountaintops.com. C. Mace, what's up?
What's up, guys? Just still running some errands, but I was definitely catching some of the game. I woke up, and then at a certain point in the morning, I'm like, oh, yeah, there's hockey on again today. Like, six games, so it's crazy, but I had to tell you, it looks unbelievable. I think the NHL did an unbelievable job with how they've set it up. It looks absolutely fantastic, and the hockey's pretty good, too, so I'm a pretty happy camper.
Well, it was a tune-up for what we get to experience on Saturday morning. Today, this game that I just brought up started at 11 o'clock our time, and that's when everything will start on Saturday. 11 o'clock our time, it's a full slate. Five qualifying round games, sun up to sundown. So we'll get hockey from about 11 in the morning to about midnight on Saturday. So clear your schedule.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's and you know it's awesome seeing hockey back. Period. But you know where all of our allegiance lie with Nashville. So I you know when Willie tweeted out the setup of our booth today, I started getting the butterflies. I started getting excited that you know this is actually a reality and that we're coming back to work. And I just couldn't be more excited. I can't wait to see the guys tomorrow in the preseason game against Dallas, and I can't wait to get back on the broadcast with our crew, too. It's good times. I really couldn't be more excited.
What we were trying to figure out is what would be the mentality of these guys, and I think we all suspected, but, you know, look, we are in a pandemic, and it's fair. They're human beings. They have families. They have lives off the ice. Would they be a little bit hesitant on the ice? Would it look exactly like we've come to know from hockey games, especially postseason games, in years past? Or would it look a little bit different? Well, if last night and today, by the way, there was a little bit of a scrum already here in the third period with Tampa and Florida. Last night, Edmonton and Calgary, you know that area well. You know that rivalry well. And it looked like a rivalry, and it was an exhibition game last night. They were face-washing and, you know, pushing each other, and there was a whole lot going on in that exhibition game. And if that is a prelude of things to come, I think they just answered our question. When they drop the puck, instincts take over, and everything that's going on that's happened in the year 2020 will go by the wayside. It's going to look like what we've seen, you know, with our eyes since we've been watching hockey.
Yeah, it's, you know what, I never, ever doubted that for a second. The one thing about a hockey player is that's exactly what you are. You're a hockey player. You love to play that game. When you get to the level that these guys are at, you've had to do it for long stretches of time to reach optimal performance. You have to block out the outside distractions, and that's their sanctuary. When you get on the ice as a hockey player, nothing else in the world matters at that point in time. You just focus on hockey. It's just you're feeding your love and your passion. You get that opportunity, and these guys, just like everybody else, as you mentioned, they're human beings, and they're put back in a situation where they get to do exactly what they want to do. Yes, it's hard to be away from your family. There's no doubt about that. That's never easy. But when these guys get on the ice, it's go time. These guys hate each other. They have an opportunity to win a Stanley Cup. You know, given all the odd circumstances, everything that everybody's going through and that's been through this season, they still have, you know, an opportunity that you never know how many times as a hockey player and an athlete that you get a chance to compete for the Stanley Cup. And the Nashville Predators, you know, they have a good, very strong team that's capable of winning a Stanley Cup. They have an up and down season. They've got a prime opportunity right now to erase that and to do something special. And you've seen already, like you mentioned, the guys that are playing the game. There's no difference. It might be a little sloppy at times just because of the rust and not having played a lot of games prior to these, but I'll tell you what, the fire and the passion and the meanness and all the stuff that goes with playoff hockey, the intensity, the every play is the biggest play, that's going to be there. There's no question in my mind. We've already seen that in some of these exhibition games.
Last night, I just happened to be watching at the right time. Oh, we got the – wow. Mitt's getting dropped in this game. McBrian Boyle going after it. Can't see who that is for the Lightning.
I like it.
Wow. Okay, a little third period scrap in Tampa, Florida. That's where I was going with this. So last night I was watching Edmonton-Calgary, and I just happened to be catching it at the right time. And right at the midway point of the second period, both coaches changed goalies. Sergachev. Oh, Boyle and Sergachev. Okay. Dropped the mitts, and they got after it. They switched goalies. So it was right at the halfway point. So both sets of goalies played half the game. I'm sitting here watching this game right now. In a 4-0 game, Bobrovsky is still in there, and it's 5 minutes gone in the third period. So Bobrovsky has played the – looks like he's going to play the entire game for Florida, and right now they're losing 4-0. John Hines told us that he has not informed the goalies. So he asked not to say who he was going with tomorrow. I can respect that because he felt like they needed to hear it from him. I got no issues with that. How do you think John Hines is going to play the goalies tomorrow? Halfway split or two periods, one period?
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of been widely known that every coach says this, that you're going to need both goalies if you go on a long run and all this kind of stuff. And the Preds are, at a luxury because they have two incredible goaltenders. It's, in my opinion, the top goaltending tandem in the National Hockey League. But if I'm the goalie, personally, when you come back in a training camp and you've skated and practiced and you might feel good, and all those elements of your game, it's a completely different animal to play a full 60 minutes, to prepare the night before, to, prepare that day of the game mentally, more so than physically, and then just go through 60 minutes, three periods, go through the warm-up, come back in the room, get refocused, go through, all the whistles and the stops and starts and dealing with all the traffic. It's draining. And physically, you may be in the best shape of your life, and on the ice, you're great at doing that, but mentally, keeping the focus as a goaltender for the full 60 minutes and in playoffs, could go for however many periods, it's important to get that full game in my opinion. But they only have one game. So in a series, best of five series, just to get into the Stanley Cup playoffs, you have to make sure that, maybe that the other guy gets 20 minutes in, because what if you start, one goalie and then he has a tough first game and you're changing over, you make a decision to change goaltenders and they haven't had any game time. So it's going to be a tough decision. Two different perspectives. Goalie, you want to play the complete 60. As a coach, you might have to make sure that at least one of the guys gets 20 minutes. So I could see John Hines doing a two-period, one-period split, but that's just pure speculation.
Chris Mason is with us. And Mace, I don't think either one of us at this point knows who the game one starter is going to be. Do you have a gut feeling at all who you think it might be?
I really don't. The only way is to really, if you look at camp and if you put stock into the scrimmages or the games that they played, I thought Juicy Saros was a little better in those games. He was phenomenal. Pekka had a few more goals, but he also had a lot more defensive breakdowns in front of him. But both guys, I talked to Ben Vanderklok before that, and he said both guys are way ahead of where that he expected them to be because they got to do some work and they stayed in shape and during the break and all that. So it's going to be tough. I wasn't there every day, obviously, but I saw enough, and both guys, and obviously my eyes go right to the goaltenders right away, and both guys did really look good. So I really don't know, because you look at the season and Pekka's perennially gets off to like amazing starts to his season, and Juice's often come out of the gate slow, and I know he's been the backup goaltender at times, so he's got maybe an advantage there. But then you look at Saros at the end of the season, I mean, the kid was absolutely dialed in. He had like a 94 save percentage in his last 11 games, which is just crazy. And so I don't know. And he was the unheralded number one goaltender. Had the playoffs started then, he would have started, but he's never started a playoff game. And Pekka's got the experience. So this is, I think, more than any other team, to be honest with you, this is probably the toughest John Hines has the toughest decision to make of who he picks as a starting goalie.
You had a good back and forth, and I would recommend if people want to watch and get a little insight on the series, this would be a good way to do it. You and Tyson Nash, your counterpart for the Arizona Coyotes broadcast, you guys talked back and forth and did a little Zoom that was broadcast on the Fox networks. What was the number one insight you got from him? What was his biggest piece of info that came out of the Coyotes camp?
Well, I honestly think I think there's a lot of parallels between their season and our season in terms of their top guys maybe not being at the top of their game. Phil Kessel was hurt for a lot of the year, and I guess he continued to play because he wanted to keep his Ironman streak alive. Taylor Hall, they traded for Taylor Hall, thought that was going to give them the scoring punch that they needed because, you know, as we all know, Coyotes are very strong defensively, but they've had a little bit of a tougher time creating offense, and it kind of went the opposite way. They struggled at the end of the season, and it didn't quite work out the way that they had, but, you know, a lot of times I think we take for granted these guys, they're going playing in a completely different conference. When you get traded, there's a time of adjustment. You don't just always automatically go somewhere and you're at the top of your game. You need that time for adjustment. But much like a lot of our top guys, they've had, you know, a time to be off and to reflect and to kind of get that out of the way, come back fresh, recharged, ready to go. So those two players in particular, in the way that Rick Tocchet was skating the lines in training camp, I think that they're pretty well evened out in terms of the scoring prowess on every line, and then they have a great fourth checking line that's really hard to play against, and one of those playoff gritty type of lines. So I think, and their goaltending situation as well, they've got Darcy Kemper, who is their MVP, one of the top goaltenders in the league, Antti Raanta, who's a very capable guy, had like a 92.3 save percentage, I think during the regular season, which was about eighth in the league. Kemper was third. So, you know, they're a team that's built for the playoffs, and they get a free shot here. They weren't even going to make the playoffs. They're back in, and they've got an opportunity here. So I really think that their high-end superstars are going to be players that the Predators really have to key on. Taylor Hall, Phil Kessel, and Clayton Keller on the front in particular.
You know Steve Sullivan very well, going back a long ways. Very interesting twist that has happened going into this series. It's hard to know how it's going to affect what we see on the ice, if at all, but what a great opportunity for Steve Sullivan, a former teammate of yours.
Well, yeah, first of all, I couldn't be more happy for him. He's, he was a great teammate, and we all obviously all love him here in Nashville and what he did for our team and helping, you know, this team and organization get over the hump of just that, you know, gritty bunch of throw-together guys that would always find a way to overachieve. And, you know, he came in, and that was kind of the start of a new era. When we got Sully and a bunch of those other guys that, you know, Forsberg and Korea, J.P. Dumont, all that. But for him, I got a chance to talk to him a couple times this year, and he's loving it. He's the assistant GM. Obviously, he's with John Chyka. That was kind of a whole weird thing how, he just stepped away. And right before this happened, I mean, we just had 3-4 months off. It's really unfortunate for them. As a player, it doesn't really matter that you just go about your business. But for Sully, he was always kind of in charge of the hockey aspect of it. Chyka's an analytics guy. So I think he's ready for this opportunity. And this is a phenomenal opportunity for somebody like Steve Sullivan to come into this situation, have the, you know, this play-in and playoff opportunity for him and then the offseason. So I couldn't be more happy for him. And he's well-suited for that kind of job, I think. He's got that great hockey mind. We always used to call guys like that hockey nerds just because he was always, you know, worrying about hockey and just analyzing the game and watching. And he's got a great hockey mind. So really happy for Sully.
Chris Mason is with us. So is that something that you, when you were playing with him, that you kind of thought, okay, maybe he does have aspirations to do something from a front office role or a hockey ops role when he's done playing?
Yeah, 100%. Like, you know, he's one of those guys that we're doing video sessions with the coaches, and they often open it up for dialogue, and everybody might have someone might have a question here and there. But Sully was one of those guys that would just keep the conversation going. You know, you draw out the video, and it's easy to stop the video and then say, hey, you got to be here in this situation. And then you roll the video, and the guy's there 2 seconds later. But he was really good at, keeping that conversation. Well, what if this was the scenario? What if the guy was a right-handed shot, you know, on the power play on the wall? Do we handle it any differently? And just those, you know, different layers and levels just intrigue and to help the other guys understand and to help him understand, you know, what's expected of him. And just he's just a real student of the game. He's just always had a really curious mind. And, you know, he's well-suited. He's definitely one of those guys that, you know, we all, I think anybody that played with him could agree, you know, would be destined for something like this in his post-hockey career.
Chris, we've had this conversation, you know, in different ways before, but in your career, I mean, you had times where you were the starter, you had times where you were the backup, and whatever John Hines decides, whether it's UC Saros or Pecorine, what were some conversations that you had when you did, you know, have the transition of going from the starter to the backup or vice versa? What were some conversations with some people that you had to kind of help you through it and help you process of knowing, hey, I got to be ready at any moment, but also dealing with it because, you know, you obviously want to play?
It's tough, and it's definitely a shift in mindset. I know that, you know, when I, growing up, all the guys that, you know, play in the NHL and the American Hockey League, they've always been starters, you know, their whole life. And, you know, I first dealt with that a little bit in the minors of you have other prospects and you're going to have to, even though you may be or you think you're the better goaltender on the team, you have to understand that they need to play other goaltenders to develop them. When I got to the NHL, I've been a starter in Milwaukee and San Antonio, and I finally got an opportunity, and it was hard because I was playing behind Thomas Vokoun, and I wouldn't play for 2-3 weeks at a time sometimes. But so I trained myself to prepare like every game that I was going to play that game, and the way that I did the night before, the way I did game day, the drills that I did, everything I did, I prepared that, you know, the exact same way that I would prepare if I was playing that night, because I knew when I got the opportunity, whenever it was, whether it was the second game of a back-to-back, whether it was in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, that I didn't know how many opportunities I was going to get. And when they called my name, I better be ready to play. And that really helped me, you know, really handle and settle into that role and to perform when I was put in that situation. Now, going back the other way, I started as well a lot of times, you know, in the NHL, not as much, a few years here and there and at different stretches with the Preds. But it's harder going back from being a starting goaltender to going back to being a backup. But you essentially have to, train your mind to get back in that role and prepare exactly the same way and have that right attitude that when you get an opportunity, because you're going to get an opportunity, you got to be ready to go. And I don't doubt that either of these guys, Saros or Peck has shown that he's been able to adjust to that, that these guys will be ready to go when they get their name called, because they both will.
We know that hockey players are creatures of habits, especially goaltenders. You have game day routines. I had some fun a few years ago of asking, is it routine or is it superstition of some of the things that they do? But with this setup, it's going to be different. You can't necessarily go about your usual routine. So how important is it from that standpoint of having tomorrow as the test run of, all right, this is how I'm going to go about my business to try and get ready for this game and do some of those routine or superstitious type things that a hockey player may go through?
Yeah, it's huge because it's all about your routine, and everybody has found a way, a routine that gets their head in the right space to be able to perform at your best level. And I think it's so important. You know, some guys are more strict on their routines and their superstitions than others, obviously. But it's important to get everything is timed out, your meetings, when you tape your stick sometimes, when you get to the rink to get stretched out, or if you need treatment, you know, what song you play at a certain point of time in the dressing room before you're going out to warm. Everything's timed. Everything is on a routine. When you go to the bathroom, for crying out loud, it's crazy. But it's you get your body and your mind in that space. So when that puck drops at 1 o'clock or 1:30, 3 o'clock tomorrow, you're ready to go. And all those things have to be taken into account. And like you said, it's going to be different now because their timing's going to be off because you don't have a morning skate now for these guys. You know, so that's out of there. So you get up and you have to eat your meal enough time before the game for it to digest so you feel better to be able to play and perform at night. So this is really important for them, and they're getting thrown right into it. So they're going to have to adjust with this quickly. But hockey players, as, you know, disciplined in their routine and structure as they are, you know, they're also very quick to adapt and handle the change. So, again, I think these guys will be fine. It'll just be timing-wise, it'll be a little different at first.
5-0 Lightning, 7.5 minutes to go. They have not been socially distancing in this third period. There's been a lot of fighting and face washing and scrums and getting on each other's nerves here in this exhibition game, Tampa and Florida. Any chance tomorrow we hear some pounding on the glass and come to find out it was just you on a big play, just turning around and slapping the glass during the broadcast?
There's a good chance, and this is going to be probably my biggest challenge, is when the Preds score, I often go over and either punch Willie in the ribs or give him a little, grab his shoulder. I just get so excited, I can't help it, and Willie's probably the one that asked for the plexiglass to be put in there. But
I have to say, I was in there.
Safety protocol.
I was in there, and I did think that. I did have that thought. In fact, I shared that story. I was like, I don't know what Mace is going to do here. You know, we're doing the right thing. You know, we're trying to, you know, put up the barriers and do what restaurants would do and everything, and we're taking all that very seriously. I was like, I don't know what Mace is going to do. If he tries to reach over and react and punch me in the ribs, he's going to get glass.
I think I might have to bring a hockey stick, buddy. I think that 6 feet is probably the thick I could reach you with that. You make it a little tap on the butter in the back of the legs, so be ready for that.
I think you should wear your gloves during the broadcast.
Oh, no, they're way too stinky. I can't. I wouldn't do that to you guys.
He's got to wear the jacket. He's got a reputation to keep with the wardrobe.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thanks for the visit. Hey, it's here and we're excited. So certainly we'll be watching and people will be listening. So we've got two great options for Predators fans tomorrow for the exhibition game against Dallas. Thanks for the visit as always.
Thanks, guys. Just want to give a quick shout out. My wife, Courtney Quinn, my daughter and Fraser are listening to the show right now. They're big fans and just want to give them a shout out right now. Love you guys.
Awesome. All right. End on a shout out. That's good stuff. Chris Mason and the Masons, brought to you by Smoky Mountaintops, the exclusive partner of the Nashville Predators. Visit SmokyMountaintops.com. That's a good way to end that segment. We talk with C. Mace every Wednesday starting at 1 o'clock. We'll come back. More on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Everybody was kung fu.
Hey, you can get two tickets for two parks for the price of one. That's two tickets for the price of one to Beach Bend and Splash Lagoon Water Park. That's on sale right now. Go to thegamenashville.com, click on the Beach Bend Buy One, Get One Free ad, and to purchase your tickets now for just $37.99. Good stuff there from Chris Mason. Speaking of Brooks Bratton, we will actually talk to him tomorrow on the show in the first hour from Edmonton as we get ready for the Stars and the Predators, and he can explain a little bit more of the setup. Willie was explaining a little bit of their broadcast setup in Bridgestone Arena, but Brooks is actually on the trip with them. Very limited staff. Everybody was small staffs, all the teams. Much smaller groups than normal.
And because of that, Brooks has got a lot of responsibilities.
Yes.
He's doing a lot of people's jobs over there. So it's like he gets to go. I know he was enthusiastic about being able to go, but at the same time, he's taking on a lot of stuff because the people that would normally be there, they're not there, so they can't do what they normally do. So he's doing it.
In other words, he packed a hat rack, just so you know, just for all the hats he's got to wear. So we're going to talk to Brooks tomorrow in the first hour, and we'll get
to... I'm curious about that. I'd love to know just kind of what he's experienced so far.
Well, good. Me too. We'll ask him that. We'll find out. Well, I think we're all curious. Say, hey, Brooks, this is how we'll start it. Tell us about Edmonton. Tell us about the layout.
How's Joey? Because I know that's his buddy.
By the way, I wanted to say this, and we didn't get a chance to bring this up. I will admit that this did cross my mind. Was Coach Hines like kind of taking a little bit of a subtle dig at the NBA for all their whining and complaining when they got to their Orlando bubble? Like, he made a point to talk about how nice the JW Marriott was in Edmonton and the food. And I was like, is he taking a shot at Rajon Rondo?
Maybe. Willie, you've been to the JW. Is it pretty nice?
Well, come on. We know the JW is.
Oh yeah, it's nice. It's very nice.
It's attached
and
to
it's
Rogers
new.
Arena.
That's the other thing. Yeah. It's brand new.
Brand new and attached to the arena. Oh, it's nice.
Real
it's
nice. Clark.
It's real. And get yourself something real nice, Clark, like a JW Marriott. But I just thought it was funny. I kind of chuckled to myself. I was like, he made a point to talk about how the food has been good and the accommodations have been good. And I was like, is that a little subtle dig at the NBA for their little comments? Now, that's kind of all gone away. But when they first got there, remember all that? They were whining about their rooms and the food.
Oh, yeah.
And wasn't a very good look for the NBA.
Yeah, but, I mean, come on.
Luckily, that stuff has quieted down.
It has, but then, you know, you got – some, you know, getting chicken wings at a strip club. I mean, they've just had some of those things that have been happening in the NHL. It's been pretty much quiet. So,
although they got good news today, as I read earlier, Richard Deitch is the one who tweeted it out that they just got the latest results from 9 days ago. Every player tested came back with zero positive tests in the NBA. So that was very, very good news from them. A test that were taken on July 20th. And that is something that came out. And you've heard me bring this up this week a couple of times. And it came out of we had Alex Appel on at noon from Fox 17. He attended the Governor Bill Lee's press conference yesterday. And there was, once again, I hate to, the two ladies that were on hand as well. They fielded a lot of questions. And I don't remember their exact titles or names. And I'm sorry, they did a really good job, but I can't remember their names and their exact titles. But so the three of them were a part of this press conference. And they made a point to talk about that one of the biggest problems right now, and you've heard me bring it up, like I said, a couple of times on the shows this week, getting tested is not the issue right now. You know, in our country, getting tested is not, thank goodness, right? It's pretty easy to get tested. Like, that is not what's the issue. But they brought up, it's getting the results. And I've brought that up of, you know, just, it just takes a while. And they actually went into a little detail.
And getting accurate results.
Yeah, that's another thing, yes. So there were two layers to it, right? Getting accurate results and just getting timely results. But I think you were watching too, Willie. I think I'm pretty sure about that. And they went into a little bit of detail and talking about, I guess, and this is what I said when I brought this up, like, I don't know how these labs work. I don't know the details that goes on and what it takes to get these results back. So they kind of peeled back the curtain a little bit, and they brought up, I guess, a couple of things that they need that is not, you know, that they don't have enough supplies of to speed up the process. And I'm not smart enough to know what they put out there, the products, the name of the product, but to help speed that up. And so that was the first time I had heard, you know, that's just, I'm not saying it hasn't been said, it's just the first time I had heard them talk about the actual process of getting the test results and what they need and what goes into it. And I guess that's been the problem is, you know, I guess the things, some of the things that they need that they haven't had it, the right amounts, enough of it. It's, they can't get it fast enough. And so it was interesting to hear them talk about that where, you know, getting tested is not the issue right now in our country. It's the results. And as you mentioned, Willie, getting accurate results as well.
Yeah. The false positives can throw a monkey wrench. I mean, just the looking at what Juan Soto has been going through with the Washington Nationals, just for a high-profile example. He's had several tests since he tested positive. I guess they're now targeting Saturday for his return, but I know throughout this whole process he's felt fine, right? He feels like he can play, but that's the tricky part of it. If we did have, we could wave a magic wand and have everybody get tested quickly and easily and have the results and know those results, that would help a lot, but it's still going through a lot of evolution here. It's still not where we hope it will be.
Mercifully, it has come to a conclusion in Toronto. And the Panthers, I'm sure, will delete this game and move on. They fall 5-0. Both coaches have decided in this game. They went with their starters the whole way. Bobrovsky went the distance for Florida, and Vasilevsky went the distance for Tampa. So Cooper and who's that guy? I don't know if you guys have heard him. Who's the coach for the Panthers? What's his name? Guy with the mustache.
Begins with a Q.
That's his first name or his last name?
That's the last name.
Last name, yeah.
Some just call something him Q. Ville. Like a...
Is it Vol or Ville? Is it Quinville or Quinville?
Queenville?
So Quinville and Cooper.
Queensryche, you know, whatever.
Queensryche.
They decide to ride their goalies for 60 minutes. So that was an interesting play there.
Well, Tampa, of course, has this game plus three games that they can tinker, and they know who their guy
is.
Right? So it's probably just Vasilevsky saying, I would like to play X amount. But for Bobrovsky, that's he's got to do it, right? The problem is he has not been as good as anybody else they've put in there. They've had other guys in there. They've been all done better than Bob. But yeah. He's the guy that has to do it for them. A lot of pressure on him in this series. Because their team has done well, right? Everything else that they've done, adding Quinville and going out and making the changes that they made, their team, you could argue, if Bobrovsky had been even average, they easily would have been in the playoff picture. Only his subpar play has kept them on the outside looking in. I think you could make that argument.
I would agree with that. Minnesota and Colorado are next up for game two of six exhibition games today, and they'll be dropping the puck very, very soon on that. I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but this was pretty interesting because I think the Marlins situation and them, they have been shut down through Sunday, that evidently Major League Baseball and the union is asking players to consider some rules adjustments to maximize their health. Have you seen this?
I have not.
And I guess what Major League Baseball has proposed to the union, for the union to pass along to their players, is for them to consider 7-inning doubleheaders.
That was talked about at the beginning. I like the idea.
And extend the 30-man limit for additional time. So also ask them to consider the rosters.
That would come up.
Two things on their plate, extending the rosters and considering 7-inning doubleheaders.
I think you have to consider it heavily. I was thinking that yesterday because if you want to buy time for teams that might go through this, and hopefully there's no additional teams that go through what the Marlins are going through, but it could happen. We know that. So you have to have some flexibility in the schedule if you want to get everybody to play the same amount of games. And I know they're very determined to try to get that done. So that may be the only way you could do it is some 7-inning doubleheaders.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I think considering already what's happened in the brief amount of time, by the way, it haven't even been up and running a week yet. And look at all the, look at all the news that's come out of Major League Baseball. By the way, they're about to drop the puck right now in Edmonton between Minnesota and Colorado. But I don't see where they have a choice. I mean, I think to me, 7-inning doubleheaders are a no-brainer.
Yeah, I don't love it.
I don't like the 7-inning. If they could work 9 in there, that'd be better. Or maybe a 9 and a 7.
Well, that's
so you don't
also
do two big, sevens.
By the way, I will say that is also on the plate, a 9 and a 7 for doubleheaders. But why are you okay with one game being a 7, but as long as it's just one game? I mean,
well, if it were up to me, I would try. And I would think the players, if you're going to have a 30-man roster and you have plenty of pitchers, then I don't know why you wouldn't just do 9 and 9, especially with the extra inning rule. Now that you have less chance of the first game going 15 innings, why not just go 9-9? What else do you have to do? So I would think just go double nines.
I completely agree with that. If you're going to keep 30-man rosters, then just keep it as is, because you got to think about statistics. You have to, because the stats are going to change, or you have asterisks involved if it's a seven-inning game. And I know.
But it also fundamentally changes the flow of the game. Like Caleb Joseph had a great point when we asked him about that. He said, seven-inning game, right? You're bringing your setup man in the fifth. You're bringing your specialist in the sixth. You got your closer in there. You know, it shortens the game so much. It's a very different strategy where, you know, if it's the sixth inning of a seven-inning game, that's a lot different than the sixth inning of a nine-inning game.
What about extending the roster limit? What do you think of that?
I'm all right with it, because the more you watch, and I've been watching the Mets-Red Sox the last couple of games, and I'll tell you, some of these pitchers who are pitchers number 14, 15, and 16, teams are carrying, you don't.
Uh-oh.
He's getting zapped again.
Man pitching staff doesn't mean you have 16 major league pitchers.
You kind of broke up there, Will.
Also seeing this, a Philadelphia Phillies employee who was working the visiting clubhouse has tested positive for coronavirus.
Ooh.
So while the Phillies all came up negative, an employee of the Phillies who was working the visiting clubhouse has indeed tested positive.
Not good, but I mean, these are all things that, you know, you were worried about, and I think it's just a situation they're going to have to continue to monitor. I know that there was a schedule shift with the Yankees, and they're going to play the Orioles and all of that, but I think some of these rule changes that are coming up that they're discussing, I like that, because it's showing, okay, we understand this is an ever-evolving situation, so maybe we do need to adapt as we go, but you know, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen if the Marlins are the only one that it happens, that the whole team, you know, basically gets it, or a good chunk of the team gets it, or they're going to be more. And so having a contingency plan in place, whether it's keeping 30-man rosters or potentially more, and then, you know, the doubleheaders and being able to work those in, I think it's very good that they're having that kind of dialogue.
A rebound goal for the Avalanche, Don
Scoy. I think
just
being able to take a day. You know, just being able to slow things down if you have the option of coming back to doubleheaders, I think is smart. Just so you don't have rash decisions. So if you have something like this pop up, you say, okay, we can use our cushion. We'll play two down the road. We need to not play today. We need to not travel today until we figure it out.
Bad rebound off Stalock. Went off Stalock. Rebound for Donskoy. And it didn't take the Avalanche long to tally a goal. Just over a minute in, Colorado strikes first, up 1-0 on the Wild. Like I said, a rebound by Donskoy. Avs up 1-0. We'll come back and put a bow on Wednesday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase. That's next on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Ah, yes. Getting the lead out on the stretch run here. Final segment of the show today. 1:48 is the time. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe here with you for Darren, Donick, and Chase. Darren bowing out just a couple of minutes early, so he will go 8 2/3, not get the complete show. We'll have to get the save, but he does have to get to the dentist appointment today. Of course, tomorrow we'll have all the coverage. The Predators play 3 o'clock. Pregame at 2 o'clock. So Darren will make it up and then some tomorrow with a long day of broadcast. It'll be the Predators and the Stars. I'll be over at the arena with Mace. We'll have the game for you on Fox Sports Tennessee. So we got you covered wherever you are as the Predators resume play. So Chase, you have the scene going on in Washington with the football team. And I think it looks like they're going to have their numbers on their helmets, keep the same colors and stuff. Yep. But you just saw something put out there by Channel 5, pretty interesting story.
Yeah, I actually saw this last night. They ran the story. Kyle Horan, the reporter, did this for Channel 5, and I immediately made a mental note of, okay, I got to bring this up, and I almost forgot about it, but we got to bring this up on the show. So there's always a Nashville connection, it seems. So a Nashville man named Cal Spears, he bought a bunch of domain names way back when for college football. He was he's quoted in the story saying, I bought a series of college football domains. So it was a state name plus football. So alabamafootball.com, tennesseefootball.com, all of those things. And one of the domains that came as a part of the package, he was mainly getting SEC, but one was washingtonfootball.com. So he's now with the CEO of Roto Grinders, which is a fantasy sports website. And he gets contacted by a broker from GoDaddy.com saying that they would like to buy the domain name washingtonfootball.com. And as the story will tell you, they offered him $3,500 for that domain name, for washingtonfootball.com. They didn't say who they were with, but you could kind of put two and two together that it could be. And this was before they made the official announcement. And so he said that they went through back and forth and a negotiation. He ended up selling it for $10,000. So he got $10,000 for washingtonfootball.com, and then the next day it was announced that the Redskins would be the Washington football team moving forward until they come up with the team name. And so they launched. He went to that website, washingtonfootball.com, and sure enough, it was the NFL team. So here's my thing, because he...
And by the way, he donated the money,
yes,
to the American Indian College Fund. So pretty cool move right there.
Yeah, absolutely. But my thing on this is he and I don't know if he was just being humble or how it was, but it was like, okay, to me, if I get contacted for this domain, I am going, yeah, Dan Snyder wants to buy this. Because he jokes like, hey, I sold the domain to Dan Snyder. Dan Snyder wants to buy this. Willie, I'm getting more than 10 grand. That's just me.
You would have held out.
Because I know who it is. I'm like, Danny, come on. You've screwed the pooch on this. You have been fighting this for a long time. I'm gonna need a little more than 10 grand. I I'm not hating on Cal for this, but it's like, come on, give me, you're good for it. Give me a million. You can afford it.
You'd have gone for a mil.
Oh, I would have gone for a mil. I would have totally gone for a mil. I still would have made a donation, obviously. But I'm, hey, come on.
If I have that, the bigger donation, the bigger you get. The bigger the donation can be.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So I thought it was a fun story.
That is wild. You're right. Funky stuff. There's always, you're never that far removed from the next person in Nashville.
Yeah.
Right? There's probably a lot of people that we know that know that guy.
Oh, yeah. And I recognize the site. You know, that looked familiar to me. So I think it's kind of fun that they, that they did this story and that this is what ended up happening. And again, a great cause. The fact that he donated the 10 grand, like he did, I think is really cool. But, it's funny that 6 degrees of separation, or however they say.
Jace, are you a little worried about the Braves yet?
A little. Pitching is a concern. I think Kyle Wright just isn't there yet. He's getting there.
I was so disappointed. He got through the first two innings. He looked good, and then I flipped the channel. And the next thing I know, he's out of the game.
Yeah, that was the sad part. And then they have that lineup. They have such a talented lineup, and they're striking out. I mean, 12 more strikeouts last night by the Rays striking out the Braves, and you kind of think in conventional wisdom of, okay, they're going to find it, they're going to start getting their timing back, but they just don't have a lot of time to do it. Jessica Mendoza told us yesterday, in her mind it's 2 weeks, and the Braves, they got to get it together because they have a really good team. Obviously some concerns with pitching. Fultonevich is gone. Cole Hamels, they brought in to be a veteran arm, he's not available, so he's on the IL. King Felix opted out, and he was looking good in spring training. So I believe that they're going to figure it out. They have some young arms. They have a lot of talent, but they got to do it fast.
My concern for them would be that you don't have Markakis, who was a good security blanket support guy, and you don't have Donaldson, right? And right now there's not a clear picture of who the guys are going to be, with, you know, whether it's Camargo or Riley or guys like that that can really be that caliber of player to replace. Like, I think Ozuna will be all right, right? He should hit some, but you know, not having Markakis and not having Donaldson, I guess you could say Ozuna is in Donaldson's role, playing a different position.
That's why they brought him in, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, Donaldson, I think, was a better all-around player than Ozuna. But we'll have to wait. And of course, they wanted Puig, and he tested positive, so they had to walk away from that. They
I
haven't
still
really
think
filled
that's a possibility,
that spot. You think they could go to that down at some point?
Because I like Duvall, but having a little more, you know, just more power from the outfield, I think would be good for them. If they could bring him in, because you know they brought in Matt Adams to be the DH, and I liked that move because I liked when Matt Adams was there. But still, you know, if you put Ozuna in the DH role and you have Puig in the outfield, you know, or platooning or whatever, I mean, that's a little bit stronger. And then just having options, but that could all change. If they decide they're going to keep the 30-man roster for a little bit longer, then I think you could see some different strategies by these teams to be able to bring in more bats, or in the Braves' case, bats and pitching.
Also remember that the schedule, even though it's urgent because 10 games is, you know, 1/6 of the season, but also when you play teams, right? I mean, the schedule, you know, they're playing the Rays. The Rays are really, really good. The Mets are playing the Red Sox, who right now don't look very good. The Nationals had to start and play the Yankees, right? The Yankees are really good. So that will balance itself out. So the Braves are going to get their turn beating up on the Orioles, and if the Red Sox don't get it together. The Red Sox look bad to me.
Yeah.
That pitching staff is just bad. That.
Yep, it has not looked good, and again, you got 60 games, and really, and who knows? I mean, in some cases, you may have less than that, depending on what happens with other teams. But you just don't have a lot of time to fine tune, and that's one thing we expected out of this season. But I'm not ready to write off, you know, the Reds or the Braves or even the Red Sox yet. But it is concerning.
I'm just glad we're talking about games. Tomorrow we'll have a hockey game for the local team. We're looking forward to that big time. So with that in mind, we'll pass the baton to Jared and the GM. That's coming up. Tomorrow it's game day, and we'll have all the coverage for you. We'll start again at 10. Thanks for joining us here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.